Hi everyone, and welcome to the Ecosystemic Futures podcast, provided by Shoshin Works in collaboration with NASA Convergent Aeronautics Solutions Project. I'm your host, Marco Annunziata. In this podcast, we are exploring ways in which the circular economy can be impacted by platform interconnectedness and how this can affect ecosystemic wellness. My co-host today is Chris from NASA. Welcome, Chris.
Hi, I'm Chris Potter. I work in California at the NASA Ames Research Center in Silicon Valley. And my main area of research is looking at how ecosystems, natural ecosystems around the world change in response to all environmental factors such as climate change, human development, and things like wildfires and other disasters. So happy to be here. So joining us today is Dr. Peter Evans. And he's the Chief Strategy Officer at McFadden Digital and an expert in trends and disruptions that support business planning and investment prioritization.
Welcome, Peter.
Thanks for having me. Really excited about our conversation today.
I am especially excited about our conversation because Peter and I have worked very closely together in the past. So it's a great pleasure to have another opportunity to resume our discussions and conversations. And Peter, why don't you start off giving us a brief overview of your current role, your expertise in the circular economy, what you're doing now, what you're excited about now?
Great. Yes. So I now lead a strategy at a company called McFadden Digital, which specializes in advising companies on how to build marketplaces. So we are technology neutral. There are quite a number of vendors out there that provide the tech stack that support marketplaces. And so there's often a lot of questions as to which one is the best one to choose, and also aligning with the particular company's business model. So over the last 6 months, I've worked with companies building marketplaces to support education, marketplaces that would involve large industrial companies that are looking in B2B opportunities, as well as retail companies that are transitioning from traditional e-commerce, which is selling their own products, to opening up to a marketplace where they bring on third-party sellers and sell their wares as well. And so we're seeing a global trend in this direction. It's a really interesting and exciting space. Obviously, the big players people are familiar with, like Amazon and eBay and maybe Alibaba in China and Zalando in Europe, but there are thousands and thousands of platforms now operating around the world. One of my favorite is Rover, which is a dog walking platform. It matches people who walk dogs with people who need dog walking services. So there's all sorts of platforms around the world.
It's fascinating. It's right at the center of this trend we're seeing now of the economy in general shifting more into a circular, more platform-oriented ecosystem. How do you see this developing in the future?
Well, actually, many people think of platforms as being very disruptive, right? And classic examples are Airbnb, which disrupted the hotel accommodations industry, Uber, which disrupted the taxi industry. But when we think about traditional platforms, what they're doing is actually accelerating linear business models, right? And what I mean a linear business model is you have a supply chain where you secure the supply of the goods, you process them in some way, and then you sell them to customers, right? That's the linear model. And most platforms are accelerating and helping create efficiencies related to that linear model, right? Amazon is a great example of that. But we have another idea out there that has gained tremendous traction in the last decade, which is this idea of the circular, in which you not only take, make, and use products, but then you find reuse of the product or recycling of the product. That's the idea of the circular economy. These two ideas need to be brought together, right? We need the efficiencies and the optionality that's created by marketplaces and platforms, but we also need them to think about how they can contribute to reusing those products so that we're not just discarding them. And we know about the tremendous waste that's ending up in the ocean with plastics. Very few apparel is actually reused. It actually ends up in landfills. I think something like 3 million shoes end up in landfills a year in the United States alone. And so the question is how do we transform platforms and the value of platforms and embrace a circular economy?
which is essential, because if we think of the priority of bringing billions of people in emerging markets up to advanced economies' living standards without more reliance on the circular economy, that's just impossible, right? It's just totally unsustainable.
Right. Well, and there's also even security issues. So we're seeing with mining, it takes years to build a mine. Certain elements are only in certain locations around the world. And so if we rely just on securing the needs of the modern economy with just mining new virgin material, that leads to concerns about resource availability and scarcity and even geopolitical issues about where those materials are located. So it's an economic issue, but also an environmental issue and potentially a national security issue.
I can jump in here with another question, follow up on at this point. I think, you know, a lot of people feel and have intuitively understand that the size of these platforms is big, like Amazon. But can you talk to us about how really big they are and the full impact of the platforms on the global economy?
Wow, that's a great question. So I would say 15 years ago, we've always had platforms, right? Even like in medieval times, you know, the marketplace or the fair is a kind of a platform, right? Farmers and artisans brought their goods in a central location. What's really different about today is the emergence of the internet, you know, smartphones, and the connectivity that you get, which enables tremendous scale. So that's really what's different. So this concept of a platform has been around for ages and is embedded how we do transactions, but it's really the enablement of digital technologies that has allowed that scale. So some platforms are extremely large, right? They do billions of transactions. And so think of LinkedIn, for example. There are more than 750 million people now on LinkedIn. And so they're communicating, they have new streams, they're connecting, they even have messaging on that platform. So a lot of activity takes place. You have e-commerce platforms that are very large now with Alibaba and Amazon. If you aggregate them, I mean, they're doing billions and billions of transactions. In fact, Alibaba is famous for Singles Day, in which they do hundreds of billions of transactions just in a period of a single day, right? And so the scale is tremendous. But we're seeing now also a move into new verticals. So it's not just retail, but we're also seeing platforms emerge in the B2B space. There are new emerging platforms, for example, in chemicals, which are very complex. There are many types of chemicals. They need to be handled in a certain way. And there are now startups that have built very successful platforms helping to transact around specialty chemicals. So the diversity is quite large that we're seeing. And there's a couple of reasons why. Platforms crush transaction costs, right? In the old days, it was very, very hard to do these transactions. And these platforms have become very, very efficient. They've also enhanced discovery, finding things that normally would have taken you days. That's part of the transaction costs of the discovery. There's just very, very strong discovery engines. And so these are two of the real strong value propositions that platforms have brought. And so we're seeing a migration to more and more platforms around the world.
Peter, you've given us a very vivid description of the power of platforms. Are there examples of how platforms are actually already starting to set standards?
Wow, that's a really good question. I think this is very nascent, right? We're seeing just a few instances. Maybe we can see in apparel, for example, there's a platform in Germany called Zalando, and it's made a commitment to do more re-commerce. And so what that means is that it partners with hundreds of sellers. It needs to create a governance around what is appropriate, how it should be done. So this is really some of the things that platforms do is they set the rules for the game, right? And this idea of re-commerce is pretty new. And so they're in the process of building out those new rules of the game. So for example, what is appropriate to put on the platform to resell? How should it be labeled? How should guarantees be put against them? Zalando, or should the supplier guarantee the quality of that product? So all of those rules now are now being developed. And there are a few cases, but I imagine over the next few years, we're going to see a lot more attention in this space.
Peter, a lot of us are trying to understand systems frameworks and their methodologies. How can the platforms impact the circular economy through systems thinking and the frameworks they offer?
Well, I think you can have abstract systems thinking, but the platforms are actually doing it. So it's a great example of practical application and working through all the issues that are associated with making it work. And so one interesting application is the use of blockchain technology in that chain of custody, right? So that you know. So one of the areas that it is interesting and exciting is we're going to see an explosion of EV batteries, right? Batteries have become a linchpin for moving to climate reduction goals. We need the vehicles to make up a larger percentage and hopefully maybe a complete electrification of mobility. In that, for that to happen, you need EV battery. And so there's a huge investment, billions of dollars are now being spent on gigafactories around the world to produce batteries. But these batteries require very critical materials. But the good news is those materials can be recycled. So in addition to creating the linear traditional production chain of producing the batteries, there's a lot of thought now going into how to recycle these batteries. A big question is are we going to see companies use traditional business models like vertically integrate to close that loop? Or are we going to see marketplaces emerge in which a variety of players come in and participate in the circular component? So I think the systems thinking is there. The question is, how do you actually get it done?
This example is particularly fascinating. It also brings me to, you know, thinking of components, essential components like EV batteries. It brings me to another topic, which is that of supply chains. Supply chains have been at the center of attention for the last, at least for the last couple of years, mostly for the wrong reasons, because of disruptions and problems and the chaos that has ensued. But all this, as is often the case, has also created the push for some changes and overhaul of supply chains, which is very, very interesting. So my question, Peter, here is, are there parts of the supply chain now that you see as being especially likely to be transformed by platforms and perhaps even turned into subscription models?
Wow. Yeah, so that's really interesting. So you've asked a couple of questions there. On the supply chain side, there are opportunities to close the circle, right? Because the supply chain is really focused on how do you get the original inputs. The question then becomes, where do those original inputs come from? Is it from virgin material or is it from resupplied material? So I think that what's happening now is a recognition that you don't always just need virgin supply to make up your supply chain. You can also use reconstituted or recycled or repurposed. And it doesn't have to come from the industry in which you belong. It could come from a completely different industry. So a really interesting example that I came across recently is Turkey has established a material marketplace in Turkey, right? So that at industries in Turkey can now discover. Remember, I mentioned the power of discovery that is associated with platforms because you put them in a central database that are easily found. And I think with AI technologies, that's even going to be accelerated. And so you can find, hey, that industry no longer needs that particular material. And it could be nickel embedded in an electronics parts that can be reconstituted and become feedstock for another product that I'm producing. So it's kind of opening the lens of where you think the supply is coming from. It's not just from your traditional virgin mined material, but it can come from, you know, material that's already in your economy and it's above ground already. And I think the marketplace idea opens up new ways of reconfiguring that supply chain so that these recirculated materials can be a part of the inputs.
That's a really great answer to that complex question. So, Peter, I think we'd like to zoom out a little bit to a bigger, maybe a little bit bigger scope and picture. And I think many of us would love to see a shift to a greener, cleaner economy. But what are the first main steps that the economies around the world have to take to shift into being more circular, more platform, more?
Wow, that's a good question because it's multifaceted, right? There's an innovation component. So as we discussed, figuring out verification technologies so that these can be embedded so people understand the quality of the recycled material. So there's innovation that is needed. There's opening of minds to think about new ways of securing supply. And so there's a mindset question. And then there's a policy question, right? And you need the supporting policies. And I'll give you an example in the lubricant space. We don't typically think about lubricants very much, but they're absolutely critical to running the economy. If you do not have lubricants, the machinery that runs our vehicles, our factories, and all sorts of mechanical things don't work very well. These lubricants don't, you know, what happens often is that they're burned, right? Once it's been used, that lubricant is then fed into a waste stream that's then used as bunker fuel in marine applications or in industrial boilers. Really bad for the environment. And it's a waste because those lubricants can be input into the system again. However, there's a lot of things that need to happen to make that. So you need to recollect things. What's interesting is that we think about the supply chain, which is aggregating all of these materials into a production process. It's then produced, and then it's distributed again to lots of consumers. That needs to be recollected. So in the case of lubricants, you need to have deals with the repair shops that do the oil changes and things of that nature. You need a logistics system that can collect it to take it back to the refineries to put it back through the system again. And when we think about the circular economy and what are the elements, I think this whole space of logistics system is really interesting and important. And there's this term now that's used called reverse logistics that's getting more attention. And really big companies like FedEx and DHL are really interested in this space because there's a new business opportunity to get that distributed resources recollected again and sent back and become circular. So a key component to making a successful circular platform is the system. And that is transforming rapidly. We've seen these last mile companies, and you can imagine if Amazon wanted, it's already got the front end, it could go full circle if it would collect a product. And in fact, Marco, from an economic standpoint, Amazon knows a lot about what you already have purchased and knows what's in your house. If it put out a call to Prime members and said, hey guys, we would like to recollect some of the things that you don't need anymore. We'll send our truck around when we're delivering things, but we want to pick up stuff as well. You could pick up all sorts of things that could be then recycled in the system. Currently, that is not done, but it could be done in the future. And so that we would get a full cycle system. And what's really interesting is the pricing mechanism that could be instituted and the knowledge that a big company like Amazon or eBay or Alibaba has regarding the pricing of certain commodities and products, right? And if those prices go up, they put out a call and people have stuff in their house that they don't need. You know, trust me, that's going to induce a tremendous amount of supply.
It also implies, sadly, the end of the time-honored tradition of the garage sale.
You would basically platformize the garage sale. Yes, indeed.
Indeed. Peter, I want to keep the broad lens on for a while. What you are describing is in many ways a fairly significant reshaping of the economic system. Now, every time we talk about any economic system, what we do instinctively is we focus on one or two significant goals. In the traditional market economy, we've always said we try to maximize economic growth, employment, living standards, and then you figure out there are some unintended consequences and you say, hold on a second, what is happening to income inequality? What is happening to sustainability and the environment? So I'm going to give you a challenging question. As we look at the circular economy, platform-based circular economy, What is the best way of taking a broad look of the various welfare considerations that we should be keeping in mind from day one as we start designing this new system?
Wow. So, there's a broad set of principles. I think the platform companies are your traditional. Many of them are publicly traded, and so they operate within the bounds and the incentive structures associated with publicly traded companies. And so I think that, you know, they will be profit maximizing. And so if things are related to, I guess, standards of labor or income and things of that nature is a combination of what society establishes as norms or rules and regulations. And then the companies need to figure out how to adapt and adjust to those conditions. And so I don't think that this makes them any more special in that respect, but they can achieve, I think, more efficiently some of the goals that we're aiming to achieve. You know, one of the things that I've started to think about is, what if there was a platform circularity score? Right now, the platforms are more or less, as I mentioned at the onset, reinforcing the linear economic models. They're not actually producing that circular. So is there a possibility that not only do we have a carbon score and all of the work that's gone into constructing those, but a platform circularity score, so that customers knew that, hey, I'm working with a platform that is actually enhancing circularity. And so I think some thought into what that would be, how you would measure it, and how that would be implemented would be very interesting and could gain some traction and maybe shift the platforms to becoming more circular, because right now, most of them are not.
That made me think of another question, Peter, a follow-up question, and that is, how do some of these changes in our perceptions affect, how are they affecting public policy? You know, basically at the mainly at the state, maybe more local level. I mean, are public institutions and who are forming these policies keeping up with what's happening?
Well, what I'm proposing here is to have the policy discussions be reflective of and understand the options that are apparent with platforms. So, for example, in Europe, there's been a lot of discussions and work done on building regulations around platforms, but it's largely been around privacy concerns, right, with data, and around competition policy. Europe, for a bunch of different reasons, has been lagging in platform creation and hasn't been able to build the scale of platforms that we see in North America and in Asia. And so one of the reactions has been, hey, let's regulate these. And so, well, what's really interesting is Europe may be able to leapfrog and put in place, and it has a good environment to maybe be at the forefront of creating circular platforms. So there's an area in which there's a discussion, an ongoing discussion around circularity, and there's a discussion going on around the regulation of platforms. Let's bring these two policy streams together to see how there's mutually reinforcing benefits that can be achieved.
And actually, staying on this topic, Peter, we've learned from our discussion so far, from what you've told us, that platforms are most powerful the larger they are, especially as we were talking earlier about platforms helping to set standards. And clearly, the wider a platform is, the easier it will be for the standards to take hold. We know that platforms in the circular economy require a fair degree of collaboration. Do you see a trade-off here between collaboration and platforms on one side and the intensity of competition on the other? Or is it a situation where we can still have strong, efficiency-enhancing competition in a circular economy context?
Wow, that is a really good question and worthy of a lot more focus, because there's potentially an interesting trade-off, maybe, in which the benefits of having, for example, a single platform managing and supporting battery recycling across all of Europe would outweigh the competition policy concerns, right? I was just looking up last night, the cost of a battery is between $10,000 and $15,000, and there's a tremendous amount of valuable material in those batteries. As they reach end of life, they can be repurposed in a variety of ways. So one path that Europe could go down, for example, would be, hey, we're just going to pursue competition policy in these various various verticals and maximize competition. You would forfeit the opportunity to bring together all the parties to share information, to discover where those batteries are and where they could be repurposed. So one thing that's interesting is that one application of a car battery can be in stationary battery needs. So we know that variability of renewables creates a lot of stress on power network grids. We need more batteries. So if you had a platform that could match where those car batteries are coming from with where these stationary applications are for the electric power grid, you would have a better outcome from an environmental standpoint. But, you know, a concern would be that that would be blocked for competition policy reasons because somehow people perceive that as dominating the market when the platform itself is actually facilitating competition between the various parties. So there's this interesting disconnect between what does competition mean, where the welfare benefits are, and I think a very narrow, myopic view of what competition policy applications would be could be damaging in this space. So we need to think about maybe rethinking how to construct and apply competition policy in cases like this.
That's an excellent point, and very well explained.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack there. I wanted to shift a little bit and ask about national security. So much of our economy goes into enhancing national security. So can the circular economy with a lot more recycling activities contribute to enhanced national security?
Well, there again, we reach these big policy trade-offs. So for example, I mentioned Turkey's material supply platform. Imagine a world in which countries begin to become more and more concerned about access to these critical materials like lithium, like cobalt, like nickel, like copper. And what if they, like Turkey, decide to have a national material supply platform in which they support basically only sharing and exchanging materials within their own economy, right? Then we move to a world in which countries are competing, yes, on national security grounds, to restrict the trade to their national countries. So I think that there's a lot of work that needs to be done to actually rethink some of the rules and regulations and the applications of the WTO, right? It was actually created and supported the linear business model, which is the extraction, making sure that there was free and open trade with the extraction of materials into the supply chains, into production, and cared very little about the reuse of those materials. So I think a concerning path would be a world in which security concerns would lead countries to have closed circular systems rather than open circular systems. So I think a lot of work needs to be done on ensuring that the circular economy principles are aligned with open and free.
Peter, a lot of the work we do with our friends at NASA focuses unsurprisingly on the aerospace economy. How do you think that the rise of firms and the circular economy, how do you think it will impact the aerospace economy?
Well, I think the aerospace economy is one of the leading industries for innovation in materials, in processes, in security. There's a whole host of things because the standards are much more rigorous in the aerospace industries. And then that can then become feedstock for the rest of the economy. So there's very powerful and important spillover effects that are associated with the aerospace industry. What I would find exciting and encouraging would be, what is the aerospace industry doing with respect to circularity? And can it become an innovator and driver that could be a source of insights, innovation, and inspiration for other industries? So right now, I think the aerospace industry isn't doing as much as it could or should with respect to building a circular, especially around some of the critical materials that go into that industry. And so I think it's a good sandbox for considering some of these innovations and becoming a leader.
Yeah, you know, I worked in NASA during the space shuttle era, and we recycled those space shuttles, you know, like 3 or 4 shuttles made, you know, hundreds of missions. So there is a good model there to recycle our space vehicles. But I wanted to come back to another thing that NASA and the space agency is very concerned about, and that is the impact on the wellness of our ecosystems within society. How is the circular getting to that?
Sure. I mean, I think that there's a lot of evidence now that reusing materials has less of a footprint, carbon footprint, other kind of impacts that go into the production processes, less mining, for example. So there's lots of benefits to reusing materials as much as possible. But as you pointed out with the NASA example, you often have to redesign and rethink. You know, the early rockets were single use, right? And so they had to rethink what that rocket should look like. And it turned out to look more like a plane than it did a rocket, right? And so tons of material or design needs to be rethought to make it easier. So you can construct, going back to the EV car example, you can make it, in fact, right now, very difficult to decompose those batteries. You can design them so that they're much easier to take apart so that the various elements can be recycled or reused. And so there's a lot of work that needs to be done to make things easier to be a part of the circular economy. So big design component there.
Peter, this has been a fantastic discussion, and I think it's time to wrap up. And if I think back about the discussion we've had today, for me, probably the biggest takeaway is that there is no doubt that platforms will have to play a major role in the transformation of the economy, which is necessary if we want the economy to keep growing and keep lifting billions of people's living standards. But also, I think what's interesting is you have pointed out very clearly that a lot of institutions, rules, a lot of the ways we think about how we manage the economy need to change in a very fundamental way if this is to work. So there is a need for a fundamental deep rethinking. And to me, this is probably the most fascinating takeaway from the discussion. Chris, what about you? What struck you most from our discussion today?
Well, a lot of things, and I couldn't agree more with your takes on it, Marco and Peter. I guess one of the things that struck me as you were talking about national security was if a country is supplying all their energy and maybe the possibilities of conflicts and problems will be lessened over time because the economy is more internal and circular, and we're not going to be dependent so much on other countries supplying our energy. So I think that's a really hopeful thing to look for in the whole, you know, area of circular economies and the platforms that can support it. So thank you. I really learned a lot.
Peter, what about you? Anything you feel we've left out, or anything that you would really like our audience to take away from this discussion?
Well, thank you very much for having me today. I've really enjoyed it. It's been a great discussion. I think, you know, we're at very early stages. And so what we need is more dialogue, more understanding around these opportunities. But I think, you know, most innovation happens when you crash two different, you know, topics, areas, materials together. And I think that's what we're doing right now, is taking this big idea of the platform economy and bringing it together with a circular economy, and understanding how these two can work together to drive the goals and objectives that I think we all care about.
Peter, thank you again so much for a fantastic discussion today. Chris, thank you as well. And a big thanks to our audience too. And please join us for future episodes. We will explore ecosystemic patterns that help us better innovate, operate, and navigate in this increasingly connected world. Please subscribe to the podcast, and you can learn more at shoshinworks.com. Thanks, everybody.